Good morning. Thanks so much for tuning into your community radio station, KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzek, and it's that time of year when the migratory birds return to Alaska and throughout kind of every which way. Can't say just here, but we're seeing them pass through and on their journeys and celebrating them through the Alaska Hummingbird Festival. We have Leslie Swada here, who is with the Southeast Alaska Discovery Center and has lots of program events scheduled. She'll tell us more about that as well as the birds. And also Andy Piston, who is a bird aficionado.
Sure, I'm actually a fisheries biologist. I thought you were going to say that.
But likes, no, I'm going to say bird aficionado, but who, not just in the water, you also look at all the land birds and birds in the air.
Yeah, I'm actually a fisheries biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, but I do a lot of bird stuff as well. And so I usually help Leslie out with, bird walks and different things over the years.
Okay, and this will be a call-in show, so if you have questions about the birds or anything about the festival, you can give us a call at 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723. And I'm going to start off with a question about their migration. I noticed a lot of birds in my neighborhood probably like a month ago, and now very few. I see rarely a bird right now. Where are they coming from? Where are they heading? And I'm sure there's different species doing different things, but kind of an overview of what they're up to.
Well, sure. If you're talking a month ago, that's actually a little before migration really gets going, and my guess would be that it was related to the snow we had. And one thing you see when we get a big snow or really cold weather in Ketchikan, it tends to concentrate all the songbirds and things right along the water where it's warmer, and they'll look for feeders, different things. And so a lot of times you'll end up with a lot of varied thrushes in your yard, things like that. But migration around here really gets going. And right about now, actually, a lot of species are showing up. The last week of April is when things are really rocking. And then first week of May is very good, and then it starts to slow down and we get more into the breeding season after that. But so far this year, in March, a lot of the gulls start showing up. We start seeing some waterfowl moving around, like trumpeter swans start migrating through in March. For songbirds, most of our earliest migrants tend to be American robins. People are probably seeing American robins all over the place. They generally show up in March and continue on through April. Fox sparrows, those are the ones that tend to dig if you have gardens. They like to dig up your gardens and lawns, little brown, dark brown sparrows. They tend to show up right at the end of March, and they're very common right now. And just in recent, over the last week, we've had some other early migrants show up, like Savannah sparrows and Ruby Crown kinglets. We had our first snow geese fly overhead the other day. As well, we're talking about the Hummingbird Festival here. Our first rufous hummingbird showed up. The earliest one I know of for sure was around the 6th, but I think there was probably it gets a little difficult figuring out when the first rufous hummingbird showed up because we have wintering anna's hummingbirds. So there's hummingbirds now. There's been quite a few of them the last few years, and so it's hard to tell. You get reports of hummingbirds, but you don't know for sure that they're rufous hummingbirds necessarily because, the last few years we've had, who knows how many anna's hummingbirds wintering along the Ketchikan Road system. But they're here now, the rufous hummingbirds, and, people are reporting them pretty widely.
And they are very different looking, are they not?
Yeah, and especially the first ones that show up for rufous hummingbirds, it's almost always males, and they're mostly just an orange-looking hummingbird. They're very brightly colored. Anna's hummingbirds, they tend to be more greenish. They don't have any kind of that orangish color on their sides. Like if you look at a female rufous hummingbird, they have kind of orange flanks. Anna's hummingbirds, they're a little bit bigger. They're structurally a little different, but it's hard to see if you're not staring at them with binoculars. If you see an adult male Anna's hummingbird in good light, it's very obvious because they have a bright pink head. I mean, it's really, really pretty amazing looking bird and very different than a rufous hummingbird.
Okay, when you talked about with the snow and that the birds were kind of concentrating to warmer ocean zones, is that, or those year-round birds, I don't have to call them resident birds.
Yeah, especially in early March, that's pretty much birds that are around. I mean, varied thrushes, they do migrate through too, but they're here in the winter as well. And And one, you know, if it's hard for them to find open ground and things, they just tend to move towards the coast. And that's true. Like birds like red-breasted sapsuckers, one that we've seen that in the past, where in the wintertime they seem like they're very uncommon, but sometimes when we have a huge cold snap, all of a sudden you'll start seeing them right along the waterfront, and it's just related to getting pushed down by cold weather and snow.
And what are some tips for identifying them? Because to me it's like, oh, it's a brown bird. You know, there are a lot of brown birds out there that are sparrow-like brown birds or something like
that's
that.
That's actually a famous saying.
I saw this brown bird. Yeah. What kind is it? Yeah.
You know, and I think the most
brown bird.
Yeah, and it can be overwhelming for people to just grab a field guide and, well, there's, you know, 700 or 800 species there. And I think the best thing to do, especially around here, is to first figure out what is common here. It's better to know ahead of time what you're likely to see and when they are likely to show up. And then, you know, look in a book at a few things like, you know, I mentioned fox sparrow. You know, if you haven't done any birding at all and you just want to look out in your yard and figure out what things are, it's good to try to figure out what's common in southeast Alaska, you know, like a song sparrow and a fox sparrow. Golden crown sparrows are just starting to show up, and then look in your book, see what they look like, and then you'll be able to ID them. But I think the key is to know what is likely to be in the area you're at, rather than just go blindly looking at a field guide. And if you're not familiar with what is going to be common in your area, you can just get overwhelmed in a hurry.
And what are some of the things you're looking at? I'm guessing the shape of the beak, the tail length.
Depending on the speed, like sparrows can be, you know, they can be tricky for people because there is a lot of kind of brown. They're all, well, not all of them, but a lot of them are roughly the same size and shape. And so I guess, you know, when you see birds, first of all, it's probably important to just put it into a, try to figure out what kind of bird it is. Like, why is it a sparrow? You know, they have kind of conical blunt bills for cracking open seeds. You know, they tend to be on the ground versus, say, a warbler, which tend to be up in the, you know, in the trees and bushes eating insects. They have little thin kind of pointy bills. So once you narrow it into a type of bird, and if you know what, you know, within that group what's likely to be around Ketchikan this time of year, then it makes it much easier, because then you're, especially in the wintertime, you might be, you know, for common brown birds, there's only a handful, and so it makes it much easier to just look at the couple that are around and decide from there.
And is that something that guidebooks tell you? I mean, I've looked at guidebooks, and it just says common or uncommon. It doesn't necessarily say going to be in the Ketchikan area. Is that something more talking to your friends, you know, talking to birders, or what's the best way to find out that info?
You know, actually, you know, one very good way to do it is to, there's a thing called eBird. If you just type in eBird on, you know, any browser, it'll pull up. And that's this program where people all around the world, I think now, or at least in the Western Hemisphere, you can enter your data into this database, and you can search, and me and my friend Steve Heinle, we enter tons of stuff in there for Ketchikan, and you could go there, type in whatever species you're interested in, and it'll pull up everyone who's entered data for Ketchikan in a bunch of different ways, and it'll show you, like if you're interested in going birding around the airport, for example, on April 15th, you can click on the Ketchikan Airport, and it'll pull up, you know, probably hundreds of checklists that we've put in there over the years, and you can see, you know, you can click a few of those from April, and you'll see exactly what we tend to see for that date, and it'll give you a really good clue of what to study up on and what to look for when you're over there. And there's, you can do that for the Ketchikan Road System, Ward Lake, all sorts of different areas. So that would actually be probably the most useful thing for somebody who wanted to know what is specifically in Ketchikan at a certain time.
And is there a good way to look up pictures? Are there pictures on those sites? Or
Actually, there are. You know, they have it so you can embed pictures in your checklists. And so typically, you know, most people, unless they're just avid photographers and like to stick tons of pictures in their checklists, we typically only do that for birds that are rare or unusual, just to document them in the checklists. Because when you enter stuff there, in fact, I was actually the editor for eBird for most of Southeast Alaska for the last, you know, probably 4 or 5 years. And so if something, I have filters set so people can't enter things that are not normal without it getting flagged. And so for unusual species, most people who do a lot of birding will attach photos of what they saw, and that makes reviewing it much easier.
Because I find a lot of the guides, just the picture, and I don't know, maybe you have better guides or know where the guides are, but a lot of the guidebooks, to me, either it's a little sketch, and it's like, I don't know, or a photo, but it's not looking like the birds I'm looking at. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it can be difficult, and especially, you know, most birds, they don't always look like, you know, the breeding male that might be in the picture in your guidebook. But to me, my favorite field guide's the National Geographic Guide to Birds, and it is drawings, but they typically have multiple. They're very good drawings, and they show, you know, immatures, female, male, and anything else of interest. And sometimes, you know, photos can actually be more misleading than drawings, because you can have, you know, unless the light's perfect, it's very easy to get photos that can throw people off in some ways. So, but National Geographic Guide's been my favorite.
And I know you have bird walks as part of the Hummingbird Festival. How do you structure those? Is there a lot of instruction with that for people who aren't familiar with birding, or people are just sort of let loose and go hunt for birds?
Well, we usually have a birding expert lead the bird walk. And then, for example, this coming weekend we'll be heading to Ward Lake, and we should be seeing approximately between 15 and 20 species, I would guess. This past weekend we saw 16 species, so usually this time of year you get more species as you're heading closer, like Andy said, to the end of April and into the beginning of May. So and I think it's a perfect opportunity if you are trying to learn birds, because it is very focused. Usually Steve Heinel or Andy will bring a spotting scope, which is very helpful to see all the key features to identify birds. And then chances are, because it is, you know, they're starting to sing in that, you can actually see them singing, which helps you learn the song or the call, depending on what they are doing at that point in time. And for me personally, that helps me really identify that bird in my mind for the long haul, to where I can go the next month or year or whatever and be like, okay, I know what a song sparrow looks and sounds like because I saw it singing in the scope on the spirea at Ward Lake.
Okay, so, and I know you have some sounds with you, and maybe we could talk about a couple of the birds that we're hearing a lot right now and listen to.
I think song sparrow would be really good, and then golden crown sparrow, because that should be up and coming, and a lot of people are curious about that. But they're, you know, and we're talking about the little brown bird, whatever. So here we go.
Let me pull up a song sparrow here.
Okay.
And song sparrow is one that starts singing very early in the spring, and they're also a bird that's here year-round. They're a little brown sparrow. If you walk around the docks during the winter, a lot of times you'll see a little brown bird skirting around, going under the docks, doing things. Those are song sparrows. They're a little brown one, and they're if you go to Ward Lake, they breed around Ward Lake, so that's a good place to hear song sparrows singing, and they like that brushy habitat right along the lake edge. So here I'll play a song sparrow. So probably if you were walking around Ward Lake this morning, you'd almost certainly hear that, and that's a song sparrow. And you know, one thing that's good to point out, too, is really to become really good at finding birds and identifying everything that's there, songs and calls are absolutely key, because, like, typically if, you know, if I go birding around the Ketchikan Airport or something, especially in the summertime, if you go walk down wherever the White River Road or something in the summer, typically, almost everything we're identifying and, you know, and seeing is initially because we hear it call or sing. Because it can be, especially in the summer when everything's leafed out, you can go walking around and you hear a lot of stuff, but you may not really see a whole lot. And so identifying birds by song becomes really key. And it's helpful, like, if you have a specific species you really want to see, like, say, a Townsend's warbler or something, if you just get a, you know, just Google it and get a song and learn what they sound like, then it makes it very easy if you're just focused on that one species to go out and listen for it. And they're typically all over the Ketchikan area, so then you'll recognize it when you hear it, and it makes it much easier to find them than if you were just walking around looking with your binoculars trying to see a Townsend's warbler. That may take you a while, but if you listen for a song, it'll take you like 5 minutes probably during the summer in the morning.
And that is tricky. They do flit about and fly away don't necessarily hang out to allow you to identify them, but as you said, you can hear them.
Yeah, and there's some, you know, another one that comes to mind is a Pacific slope flycatcher. It's a bird that arrives later in May. They eat insects, so they can't arrive early. They have to wait till there's good insect base. But that's a bird that's extremely common. It's one of our most common breeding birds, but most people probably haven't really noticed them or seen them because they can be just very hard to find up in the trees. They're fairly nondescript looking, but they're very common, but most people would never have known about them. But they have very distinctive call note. It sounds like somebody going sort of like that.
Yeah, we call it the hey you bird.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned another, that was the song sparrow that we listened to. But
so this one is, let's see.
Oh, she was going to play a golden crown sparrow?
Yeah, that's correct.
And they're just starting to arrive. If you have seed feeders, these will be all over here in another week and a half or so. We're on the cusp of hearing it. She's pressing some more buttons.
It seems like it's not moving.
It's like a three whistled note. Here's straight from my mouth. It's like.
Yeah, because a lot of people ask me what that sound is when it comes every spring, and that's why I suggested we play it. So my phone is not willing to play it right now.
But don't worry, because there's another phone.
Yeah, we came double prepared.
All right, here's a golden crown sparrow. So you'll hear, if you have seed out in your yard, you'll have sparrows. You know, especially if you have seed on the ground, you'll end up with big numbers of fox sparrows. Well, right now, you'd have a lot of fox sparrows, and pretty soon they'll be joined by a lot of golden crown sparrows. And here's the song. That's kind of non-typical. Don't listen to that one. What is this?
And it doesn't sound right at all. The way you did it, Andy, was right.
I'm not sure where they recorded that one, but just
please
forget everything you just heard.
Please ignore the bird. That is not.
Anyhow, it's very distinctive, and it just sounds like, I think in guidebooks, if you read it, it'll say like, oh, dear me, and it mm-hmm. just sounds like.
Yeah, that's much better.
Don't listen to actual recordings.
Yeah.
You just call me up and I'll mimic any bird
you
want.
Again.
There you go. And another question is about putting out bird feeders. When should you have them out and when should you put them away, I guess?
Well, that's a multi-pronged question, because one thing you absolutely don't want to do is be feeding bears and things like that. So you have to be careful with that. Like if you have any bear problems in your neighborhoods, then it's pretty sketchy to. Unfortunately, that's all, you know, when you get into April, like the month of April is the best time to have a lot of feed in your yard if you want tons of sparrows and things. But you also have to be careful not to attract bears to your yard, especially in areas that are prone to really bad bear problems.
What will the bears be attracted by?
They can't. Like if you have suet feeders.
Yeah.
Like I probably wouldn't put suet out once bears are out, because that's just, you know,
candy.
Probably a magnet for them. Yeah. And it typically, you know, other things to watch out for. I actually quit feeding birds at my house just because there's so many stray cats in the neighborhood. And I found it just got to the point where I love having the birds around, but, it was kind of a cat feeding station. So that's something to consider, too, depending on what your neighborhood's like. But, all through the, this time of year, especially with, there's no snow anymore. I mean, the birds are doing fine on their own for the most part. Typically when I was feeding heavily, I'd usually start feeding maybe in September, and then I would keep feeding until early May usually. And once summer's around, most of those sparrows are through. Depending on where you live, you might have dark-eyed juncos still coming to your house. Chickadees are there, so it just depends on where you're at and what you like to do and what the bear situation's like. But I think the main thing I would just caution people on is attracting bears during the summer months.
So most of the time you're feeding them in the winter.
Typically, like, yeah, and that's when you really end up with large numbers of sparrows and things that your yard. You don't have to worry about bears typically. Springtime's, you know, very good, but then, you know, as we get into now, I'm sure bears are starting to roam through town now, and so you just gotta be careful. And
I'll bring my suet feeder in.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, by this time of year, you know, you're not in the wintertime, you know, it could help provide birds with, you know, some nutrition they need to get through hard times. But this time of year, birds are finding plenty of food and going good. So I would tend to tone it down a bit, but.
Okay, we have about 10 minutes left in the show. If anyone has questions, you can give a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Also tell us, Leslie, about the Hummingbird Festival, some of the events that are happening.
So we just had the kickoff for the Hummingbird Festival, which is the juried art show. We had 84 pieces, and 175 people attended the opening last Friday. And it was very successful. And so if people want to see the show, they can come on Fridays. We'll be open on Fridays this month from 10 to basically 7, because we have our Friday Night Insights also. I will say this. We will be open tomorrow in celebration of the cutter, the new cutter that's in town. So if people want to see the show, that's a good opportunity to come all day. We'll be open from 10 to 4. So it's a little bit different day if Fridays are difficult for people.
Okay, and we have a caller, Bridget, joining us. Bridget, are you there?
I am.
And what is your question or comment?
Well, I've got a question about blue jays. I live in town, and I tend to see blue jays around in the spring, and then they come around September for a while, and then I don't see them. So maybe could you tell me a little bit about their life, like their life habit? Where do they go? Where do they have their babies?
And are you speaking blue jays or stellar jays? Blue jays?
Yeah, it'd be stellar
blue jay.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a good question, because that's a bird that their numbers fluctuate in seemingly odd ways, especially in the wintertime. And they're resident birds here, so generally there's some around all year round. They do nest in the area. In the wintertime, though, especially, their numbers are just highly variable. And when we do our Christmas bird count in Ketchikan, you just see it just randomly varies every year. Sometimes there's lots of them around all winter. Sometimes there's hardly any of them. So they don't seem to, you know, in mass go on some big southward journey, but in some years they clearly move out of the Ketchikan area. And, you know, we've often actually mentioned that, like, where are they going? What are they doing? Because they're always around Southeast Alaska in numbers in some communities, but they clearly, for whatever reason, move out of the area sometimes during the winter.
So they're still in Southeast, they're just in a different part?
Yeah. I mean, they're a regular bird in Southeast Alaska year-round, but we just see their numbers from year to year at certain months do fluctuate wildly. And, you know, that's another thing. You if you wanted to look, you could use eBird probably to look at that more closely, too, if you wanted to, and you could... You know, you could pull up, like, if there was a year where you weren't seeing any stellar's jays, you can look in there, and you could look month by month at all areas of Southeast Alaska and just see if they're concentrated in one area, or if they're, you know, if there's large numbers in British Columbia to the south of us. And I've never really done that, but that's something you could actually do with eBird pretty well, because that's a common species that everybody notices, everybody reports on. So you'd probably be able to see it if they, in a particular year, were more numerous in a certain location and not numerous, say, in southern Southeast Alaska. But that is a bird that definitely, it doesn't follow like a necessarily a regular pattern like fox sparrows, which, you know, there's just a few around in the winter. Then huge numbers show up the last week of March. They're very common through April. Then, you know, during the summertime, they breed in kind of high elevation clear cuts and brushy areas, and then we start seeing them migrating again in the fall. Stellar's jays, you know, they're here year-round, and their numbers just do some strange things in the wintertime.
Okay, did that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks. I've only seen a juvenile blue jay one time, and it surprised me so much. It was in one of those big evergreen trees right around Ward Lake.
I was going to say, Ward Lake's the place we sometimes see young birds.
Yeah, anyway, one-time sighting for me. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Thanks very much. And that also, where are they nesting? Where are the various birds nesting? Are some nesting here, some move further along?
A lot of the migrants we see, some of them are just passing through. And if you take a group like shorebirds, one of the earliest shorebird migrants is a greater yellowlegs. And those are, if you hike out in muskegaries around here in the summer, those are the ones that might call really loudly and attack you. They'll fly at you and swoop away at the last moment. And those are early migrant. They nest right around here locally and throughout Southeast Alaska. Other species that arrive later, like shorebirds that might breed in western Alaska or the Arctic, places that are frozen right now, they tend to show up more in the very last part of April and May, just because they're, you know, they have to wait until their breeding grounds are unthawed. So they're arriving a little later. Other species, a lot of the geese, like we saw our first snow geese flock go overhead the other day, and that's a bird that we see in migration, mostly flying over Ketchikan. We don't see them on the ground too much, but they typically, a lot of the population that we see winters around the Skagit River Valley in Washington State, and they breed, most of them, in fact, maybe all of them breed on Wrangel Island off the coast of Russia, and they stop at the Stikine River Delta on their way north. So we'll see some of those snow geese flying overhead of Ketchikan. A lot of them will stop at the Stikine River Delta before heading onward, and they end up actually all the way up off the north coast of Russia.
And I remember last year that the huge flocks of geese heading north. What types were those? There were several different kinds?
Yeah, those, and that often in mid to late April, we'll see, you know, at least in a few days, some huge movements of geese. And typically, it's a mixture. We'll see a lot of greater white-fronted geese, which are breeding north of us. There'll be mixed flocks of cackling geese, which are, they look like Canada geese. They're much small. They're small, basically. They have a little stubby bill. And they were split. They used to be considered a subspecies of Canada goose, and they were split into their own species a few years back. So we'll have Canada geese of various subspecies flying overhead. We'll have cackling geese, snow geese, greater white-fronted geese. And so they're heading to really all parts of Alaska and northern Canada.
And here on Revilla Island and maybe Panic Island, the near Gravina nearby, where are some of the best places to go to look for birds if, you know, your neighborhood is not necessarily a good spot? Are there some places that are better for birding, that are accessible?
Yeah, it depends on the time of year you're talking about. During spring migration, one of my favorite areas is the Ketchikan Airport perimeter, and that's for a couple reasons, and it varies day to day, but when you get into late April, it's a good place to see shorebirds at low tide along some of the bays on the north and south end. And it's also, when you, right by Wolf Point there where the Tongass Narrows is very narrow, it's a really good spot to just watch birds flying north. It acts as kind of a funnel, and on a really good morning, if you have a good movement of birds, sometimes it can be just nonstop flocks of ducks, geese, shorebirds, just heading up the narrows right and left. So it can be very interesting. It's not always that way, but in most cases, you'll certainly be seeing, you know, at least a fair number of birds flying north. And then because it's you know, it has those beaches on either end where shorebirds will stop, but it also has a lot of open brushy habitat depending on where around the perimeter you are, and that often attracts lots of sparrows and different birds. So that can be interesting, but if you're talking spring migration, just going and walking the roads, I mean, you never know what you'll see, especially on a good day where there's lots of birds dropping in. So, you know, as long as you're outside, yeah. And it tends to be better if you want to see a lot of migrants, it's best to be where, you know, along the road system, places where there's kind of varied habitat. Like if you go walking up the Lunch Creek Trail in deep, dense forest, you're probably not going to see much for migration in there. You'll see breeding, you know, birds that breed in that area. But if you want to see a lot of migrating birds, it's best to be along the water around areas where there's some, you know, neighborhoods, brushy areas, different habitats, at least right around Ketchikan where it's easy to access.
Okay. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about the... Oh, I'm sorry.
I would just say that if people do want to start learning to bird, I think the bird walks on Saturday are a very good opportunity because it's your chance to have a birding expert with you with a scope and just telling you exactly what the bird is, you know, over and over and over again. And it's just a fun way to interact with the community as well and just take a nice little walk. So this weekend we'll be having one at Ward Lake at 8 a.m. and we'll just kind of go halfway around the lake. We meet at the Rotary Shelter, and so that will be great. And then the weekend after that, it will be with Jim Lewis, and that will be downtown Ketchikan. So we'll meet at the Discovery Center at 8 o'clock, and then we'll go along his route, which is awesome because he feeds a lot of the birds up and around Cape Fox. And so you can really see a lot of interesting species.
Well, you say he feeds them? So
yeah, absolutely.
That's how he photographs them. That's yeah. The trick.
Yeah, so he puts seed out for them. And so there's a lot of species that you might not see otherwise.
Very interesting. And I also notice on your schedule that you have some the bird walk Saturday mornings, but you also have afternoon programs at the Discovery Center?
Yes, that's true. Yes.
So is the Discovery Center just, is it just?
We're just open at that time. So I would say about a quarter to one till about 2 o'clock, 2:15, something like that.
Okay. And are these for the programs really more for younger people?
Yeah, they're for youth and their families.
Okay, great. All right. Well, we're running out of time here. Is there any last minute things you'd like to add? Any other thoughts?
You first, Leslie.
I just hope everyone gets out and enjoys birding.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Oh, I was just going to say we're coming up. You know, the last 2 weeks of April and early May are the, you know, best diversity and numbers of birds you're going to see all year. So get out there and start looking.
All right. Rain or shine, they'll be out there.
Yeah. Rain's better often.
Ah, very true. Okay, thank you so much. Andy Piston, Leslie Swada. Again, you can find out more about the Hummingbird Festival. The Discovery Center has information about that. And again, they are open Fridays, 10 a.m. until 7 p.m. So you can always drop by. And they will be open tomorrow, 10 to 4.